Welcome to Redacted on this Thursday. Is it Thursday already?
Today is Thursday.
Holy smokes, it's been a long week. I'm Clayton Morris.
It is Thursday.
There's Philip. There's Natalie.
Hello.
Welcome into the show. This is a show where we try to provide you context and awareness about stories that have been largely hidden or spun by billionaire media corporations. So we try to provide you an opening to look at these stories. And I will say, you know, reading through comments today, so many of you saying so many kind words on the show, just looking at them just now. Saying, I saw somebody here just saying, hey, I'm finally able to catch the show live for the very first time. So thank you. We're live every Monday through Thursday at 4 p.m. Eastern time here on YouTube and Rumble and Twitch and Twitter as well. So thank you guys so much for subscribing and being a part of our great community here.
And just really being productive part of the conversation too. You know, every time you look for comments on something that you've done, you're like, ooh, who's going to say shitty things to me? And surprisingly, you guys don't. And when you have something productive to say, you say it in a productive way. Somehow we've become a great community of people who really don't want to talk down to one another when we think that we're wrong and point out different perspectives. And wow, thank you for being you and being mature.
It is great. And I get so many great comments and some emails as well from people who are in the Donbas region of Ukraine who've said, hey, thank you for covering what we've been going through the last 8 years. Like, no one covers it. It's just not something the Western media sees. And I've gotten so many great comments from people who live in Somalia for our coverage of what's been going on in Somalia. So thank you for chiming in. We've heard so many great comments from people in Serbia as well. We just got back from Serbia and it was great. People said, please come back to Serbia. We will take you around and show you around. And if you need an interpreter, we will do that. And absolutely, we would love to do that. So thank you so much for all your kind feedback.
And also, you know, if ever we are covering an area of the world where we have not been and we have no expertise and we are not well studied, we really appreciate the global perspective. We really do not want to tell anyone what it's like to live anywhere. The Western media does. But we don't. We want to understand humanity in a sort of global context.
I think we were talking about that a little bit earlier today, which is, you know, I have not lived in Donetsk in eastern Ukraine, right?
Not in this incarnation.
Me
neither.
I have not lived there. And so when we get emails from people that tell us, like, thank you for covering this part of it and here's some additional information, that's super helpful. Yeah. Really, really is helpful. So again, we want to try to bring as much to you as we can. We are not perfect. We will make mistakes. It's our goal to kind of navigate all of this and to try to bring you a great show every night here on the channel.
Also, I'm just warning you, my nose is so itchy today. It's allergy season. So I'm going like this while we're talking. So I am going to sneeze at some point. If the control room can just like, please cut away from me because I have such an itchy nose. I want to like put a bottle brush.
A bottle brush?
One of those. I mean, it's awful.
I don't think I'm quite familiar with that phrase.
It was a bottle brush.
You know,
we'll try, but there's no promises.
Okay. I'm going to deliver all my pieces like this.
I do not know what
if anyone else has allergies up top, you guys.
Up top and party in the rear. All right, let's throw up the rundown here. This is what we've got that we want to talk about on today's show. We're going to talk about the latest. There's a lot of concerns today over food shortages. We've got some new data on that. So we're going to go through widespread fertilizer shortages, supply chain issues, and all of this is kind of around the World Economic Forum at the same time, right? Where we've got Davos like talking about what's good for the world and they're eating fine.
Yes.
And meanwhile, we've got all these food shortages as they sort of drive the narrative about what they want for us for the rest of our lives, I guess. So we will talk about all of that.
We're also going to tell you about starving people in Afghanistan. This is a heart-wrenching story. Is it heartbreaking and gut-wrenching?
Mm-hmm.
It's heart-wrenching can also be a thing. It's awful, and we're going to break down why exactly there is no food or money there.
Yeah. We're also going to look at, hey, someone got a new job, Jen Psaki. I don't know how we missed this and all of the other, horrible news that's been coming out over the past few days. But Jen Psaki, the former White House press secretary, announced a new job. And we're just going to look at the cozy relationship between Western media and, you know, and Washington elites, because it's just like an endless cycle of, hey, go to Washington, come back to the media. Go to Washington, come back to the media. So we'll look at that. Someone in the chat just asked, said, hey, Clayton, where's your epic cup? Yeah, my Mandalorian mug is...
in the dishwasher.
It's dirty. So I got to...
It's dishwasher safe.
I got to clean it like once a week, you know? But tomorrow, Obi-Wan Kenobi comes out. So I'm excited about that.
Yes, it does.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah, we don't do shows on Friday, so we will... We'll loaf about and watch
that's right.
it.
We're going to loaf. All right, let me get my clips up here. I got a whole new system here, so I'm trying to navigate my way around here. There we go. I need an images. Okay, image.
Okay, I'm just going to scratch my face
one
a little.
Image. Image. There we go. Get your itches in now.
I can't take it.
Today's show is brought to you by Outer. I am a huge fan of being outside. I always have to drag Natalie outside. She's like, needs vitamin D. And I say, look, with all of this amazing furniture that we have outside, it's why not actually spend the time outside, right? And that's what you get when you have outdoor furniture from Outer. Sustainably crafted modular outdoor sofas, couches, sectionals designed for life outside. And I love, you know, I spent some time talking with the company a while ago, and I love their mission, which was they wanted to have furniture that lasted, looked beautiful. Like when you went to go sit on it, it wasn't all moldy and wet or anything. It was like a perfect place to sit. So you could always count on sitting on it outside. That's what I was so frustrated over the years. I would buy furniture and I'd go outside and it would never look good. It always faded. It was always wet, moldy, nasty. And that is the exact opposite with Outer. And guess what? You're going to get $300 off right now and free shipping when you visit their website, which is liveouter.com/invest. That's liveouter.com/invest. But let me just tell you a little bit more about what they do. They make the world's most beautiful, outdoor, comfortable, innovative furniture that you've ever seen, all from sustainable materials, and is the only outdoor furniture with a patented built-in cover to make protecting it totally effortless. They have teak chairs to fire pit tables. Everything Outer makes has the look and feel of what you'd expect at a five-star resort for less than you'd pay at a big box store for something that won't even last. That's the thing. You buy that stuff, you know, if you don't buy the good stuff, you buy other stuff and it's gone within like two seasons. You know, it just breaks apart. Squirrels dig into it. We literally had a whole furniture set that like squirrels just destroyed, went inside, made nests out of. So you're not going to have that problem with Outer. Stunning modular designs, life-proof material with a nano coating that's water, mold, bleach, and stain resistant. Over 1,000 neighborhood showrooms across the country, so you can go and see the Outer difference in person. They have triple memory foam cushions that are super comfortable. And they have this built-in outer shell cover that protects your furniture from rain and dew. It's the how did no one think of this before invention that made Shark Tank's Lori Grenier and Mr. Wonderful fight to invest in Outer. Yes, they were on Shark Tank. So I love my outdoor furniture from Outer. I love the modular sofas that we keep outside right alongside the house with the gorgeous seats, really comfortable. And you want to check out their virtual showroom as well. Very, very simple to do. So here's what I want you to do. Go to Live Outer. That's the website, liveouter.com/invest. And you're going to get $300 off and free shipping. That's liveouter.com/invest. And for a limited time, get $300 off and free shipping. See the difference when you go to liveouter.com/invest. Terms and conditions apply. All right, let's talk about what's going on in Ukraine and what's happening with these food shortages. So we have world experts coming together to say that we have widespread fertilizer shortages, supply chain issues, record droughts, the three major reasons behind this crisis. The world says that we only have 10 weeks of wheat supply left. 10 weeks and we're done. Let's go ahead and put this up on the screen. Global food insecurity, they say, has reached levels not seen since the financial crisis of 2008. According to Sarah Menker, the CEO of Grow Intelligence, a global finance company, a global company that uses artificial intelligence and public and private data to predict food supply trends, she told the United Nations that the world has about 10 weeks worth of wheat on hand. simply adding fuel to the fire that has been long burning, basically. She says that the Russia-Ukraine conflict was not the cause of the food security crisis, but really it's like the last straw, right? This is the thing that caused everything to explode.
Yes.
She said the widespread fertilizer shortages, supply and chain issues, and the record droughts are the three major reasons behind this crisis. And she says this isn't cyclical, this is seismic. Seismic. Now, you know, you go and you start to look at this data over the past couple of months, you know that they've been saying this for months.
Yes. I mean,
details about this food crisis go back to February, go back to January. You can find instances of it in late fall last year before the holidays. So what are we doing? This is another example of world elites totally failing their people.
But even in a normal year, right, over 670 tons of food get wasted and not distributed to poor places. So, you know, it's a case of like wealthier people don't have to worry. They are going to be able to just pay a little more to get the supply that exists, right? So we really will realize, and when we get to talking about Afghanistan, about how it's not necessarily that there's not enough food right now. It's that we're not even bothering it to send it to people who need it the most.
So when you add that piece of it, then on top of sanctions, right, this is the sort of major piece of all of this, which is Ukrainian-Russian war. And then the Western world comes together and throws in all of these sanctions. And so when you go through this is the most recent general licensing number 6A. I want to put this up on the screen. This is the Office of Foreign Assets Control, the Department of the Treasury. These are the Russian harmful foreign activity sanctions regulations, right? And there's a bunch of things in here that are kept out, like they're exempted, mm-hmm. right? But you've got like agricultural commodities. You've got food for humans, including raw processed packaged foods, seeds for crops, fertilizer.
Wait. Can I just make sure I understand? These are things that cannot be sanctioned.
Right. These are things that are removed from sanctions, right? The exportation or re-exportation of agricultural commodities, medicine, medical devices, replacement parts, components for medical devices, software updates for medical devices, or anything like that transiting from the Russian Federation. So like all of these things, right? Seeds for crops, fertilizers, organic reproductive materials, medicines, et cetera. The list goes on. Sure, there was, you know, but look, bottom line is these things are being kept from that. And now all of that wheat that's coming out of Ukraine, of course, can't go anywhere because right. ports are blocked.
But also Zelensky put a no export rule as soon as the invasion began.
Right. And there's a lot of questions today around these mines in the port of Odessa, of course, the biggest port, and trying to get clarity on this, right? We covered the story yesterday here on the show, reports that Ukraine has planted mines in that port to prevent invasion, which, if you think about it, makes a lot of sense, right? They don't want large Russian ships invading through the southern part of the country. Why would they do that? And others are saying, well, I don't know, it sounds like propaganda. Are you a Russian apologist? Because clearly, probably Russia planted those mines, which, when you think about that, makes zero sense, right? I mean, I don't know where that makes any sense. That Russia would put mines, they're the sea power.
That keeps them from attacking what they would want to attack.
Right. Makes zero sense to me on the face of it. And of course, there are plenty. And then if you add that to the tens of thousands of landmines that we do know that Ukraine has planted all through their country, it doesn't really pass the smell test. So now they've got all of the mines that are sitting in the Odessa port. You've got all of this grain that can't be planted, but also can't be distributed. And then today we have the Russians saying, hey, we are perfectly willing now to come out and allow the safe passage of grain ships out of Odessa. In fact, we will even escort them. We've got minesweepers, as long as you roll back some of these sanctions. For tat. But of course, the Western media has different plans for this. So here is Fox News earlier today. Get out the military commanders, because you know how they're all about diplomacy. So always you got to drag out the military commanders. What's the best solution to get food to the human beings that need it the most? Right? What's the best solution here?
And to start with, I say, you know I'm going to do this. I say that job one in Ukraine right now is to open up the ports so Ukraine can export the food. And we should operate militarily to open up those ports. What say you?
Yeah, well, that's absolutely the right thing. The Secretary General of the UN is negotiating with Russia to remove the blockade so the cargo ships can get through and the export can take place. I don't believe he'll be successful. Let's hopefully he is successful. But if he's not successful, then I think what needs to be done, and I recommended this to the Wall Street Journal, and they editorialized it this morning, and that is to put together an international coalition of warships led by the United States, not just focused on NATO. We want the international community involved here, so Russia's not pointing a finger at NATO and the United States. This is a global humanitarian relief operation that we would be conducting with those warships. We stay in international waters, never leaving it, and go to the port of Odessa and let the ships obviously pick up the grain that needs to be picked up and then escort them out. There is some demining that would have to be done, and certainly we have the capability to do that. The other risk is the Russian Navy is there. They could see this as a provocation, and we could have a potential confrontation.
But that's just a sidebar issue. Never mind that, right? And by the way, Russia has warned against that. Like, you're going to bring all of your warships right to our doorstep?
Yes.
That's not going to fly. And here we are as the Russians saying, hey, here's our opportunity. Here's our deal, which is we're going to open up the port. We will escort these ships through these mine-laden waters. We have minesweepers. We will do what we can to get these ships through here and get these grain and get this grain out of here.
Also, you know what else they have? Fuel to run those ships.
Right. Right. Imagine that. Yeah.
That was my point.
Oh, that was your point?
Go ahead. Okay. I interrupted you.
No, I'm just, we're having a conversation about it. I just think it's interesting to hear, to hear Western powers have come up with solutions, and the solutions are right before your eyes, which is these sanctions aren't working against Russia. These sanctions are hurting the West.
Well, and it's crazy because if foodstuffs is on the list of exceptions, we are already trusting them to ship those things safely into the West, right?
Right.
So you can't argue that, well, we just can't trust them to do these kind of things if we do already trust them to do these kind of things.
Right.
So you don't need to bring in your big guns if we're already accepting trade on many different fronts. Then that doesn't make sense. It's a very thinly veiled excuse to bring your warships in, which was always a non-starter.
Well, that's exactly it, because like what do we not want? We can't have somebody that we've labeled as evil. You're evil. You're evil Putin. You're evil Russia. We can't have them then doing humanitarian things, because right. Then that destroys the narrative. So then we have no choice, but like, no, you can't do it. We have to do it because we're the good guys.
Yes. Yeah. You
know? Right. Right. And doesn't it speak to just the total collapse of this whole system? I mean, just wait a minute. The United States has all of this additional food. Right?
Yes.
Have all of this additional food that goes to waste on a regular basis. We can mobilize $40 billion to send it into a war zone. We have no idea where these weapons are going. I mean, most of them. Right. They've admitted as much at the Pentagon. We have no idea where they're going. And or if they once they get there, we really can't track them. This money, I saw someone in my comments today. It's like, how much of this money just probably goes right into like Vladimir Zelensky's personal Swiss bank account? Like, well, there's no tracking of it. That's what Rand Paul was calling for, was a tracking of this money. And he was calling for the same oversight that we used in Afghanistan, which captured billions of dollars in fraud and waste, right?
Yes.
So imagine if we marshaled some of that money back home to build up a food infrastructure in the United States where we didn't have to worry about this. We don't have to have a special panel on baby food shortages or baby formula and call a hearing of Congress to find out how we can't produce baby formula in the United States of America.
Yes, it's awful. And it's just so confounding at this point, especially when the United States talks a big game about all of these sanctions, but never let us know. It's interesting that like software patches are on the list of exemptions. Like you can't sanction software patches because right. we that would make us so vulnerable.
Meanwhile, there's a lot going on with as it relates to Vladimir Zelensky and sort of the Western elites, because we have Davos, right? We have Davos that's been unfolding. And something happened yesterday that was interesting in Vladimir Zelensky's office, which I think speaks to perhaps, we were talking earlier, maybe the desperation right now of the Zelensky government. There is plenty of reports now about the Russian army basically starting to surround Ukrainian forces.
What's left? In fact, Ukrainian officials have shown this on maps, right? Mm-hmm. That they are surrounded and are saying that they think that they can come back around through the bottom if they retake Crimea by the end of the year. So even though the situation does look desperate, they let us know that they have a plan. I want to cover these sort of internal administration stories with a grain of salt, because both sides of the media say, like, oh, there's internal fractions inside Putin's government there. And, you know, there's another side now saying that there's internal fractions inside Zelensky's. We don't know, right? And so I want to make it clear that, like, this is not a leading way to cover this news. It's just, I think it's another data point in that any of the media that tells us, like, we got to keep sending money because Ukraine is winning, right? We should ask more questions, especially if we're the ones footing the bill.
So this is RT, right? This is the source, RT. It's been, of course, banned in a lot of Western media, right? It was just kicked out of Canada and so forth. So, but this is their coverage of a meeting yesterday with Western leaders. And this was, go F yourself. Zelensky's presidential advisor called Westerners urging concessions in the name of peace, dumb Fs. Like, so we're going to appease these guys. We are going to freeze the war so that we can give up our land to the Russians. Go F yourselves, Zelensky's aide tells Western officials.
Yes, but you know, there also was a whistleblower who recently said that Zelensky was leaning towards peace and was talked out of it by Boris Johnson, right? So
yeah,
these are internal strife sort of leaks that we cannot corroborate.
Okay, but we can corroborate actual Telegram postings from other officials in that same office. And so this is on the Telegram page of Asterovich. Alexei Arestovich. I hope I'm saying that right. I know we have Ukrainian watchers who will correct us. Has resorted to obscene language to criticize those in the West. And then he insisted in an interview on Wednesday, and then Mikhail Podolyak on Telegram from the same Zelensky's office took to Telegram to clarify this. So I want to put this on the screen. Now, this is a translation. This comes from his Telegram posting there on the left. It's run through a translation app. So I want you to be able to see it there on the screen. And if you can correct it at home, if you believe that this is incorrect. Now, I want to go a little closer in the next image. The next image is closer. And he says this: I want the most complete understanding that nothing is over yet. Therefore, we must continue to fight in all directions. Russia spends huge resources to prove to the world the main thing. Allegedly, Russians have the right to kill Ukrainians and not get a full-fledged punishment for it. So, and he goes on and on and on, but they says at the bottom, so there is no ambiguity. Ukraine will not participate in this discussion. We do not trade our citizens, territories, or sovereignty. This is a clear red line. And goes on to say, so basically, we're not going to freeze this war. We are going to fight till the end. Of course, this is all in response to Henry Kissinger. This back and forth, hearing what Henry Kissinger said at Davos about surrendering your land to Vladimir Putin, really sent a shock through, because this was the word. And I think it gave cover for a lot of other people at Davos, other Western leaders, to say, like, Henry Kissinger, warmonger, is saying this. Yeah, I kind of feel that way too. Like, the way to end this is kind of how Noam Chomsky said it would end, which is Russia is not going to lose this. So either Ukraine is totally destroyed, or there's a peace settlement and a discussion about turning over the eastern section of this country right now, because otherwise it's going to be wiped off the map. But here you have, from Zelensky's own office, saying, we're not going to do that. We're not listening to Henry Kissinger. We're going to stick it out.
I mean, I'm no military analyst, right? but I can read a map. And it does not look like there is a clear path to go back to the way it was before, right? There is no going back. The regions that have been won by Russia will stay in their possession, despite the sort of desperate pleas from the Ukrainian government to send more aid. I just don't see how that could be possible.
Yeah. So I don't see it how it's going to happen either. I don't see how they're going to get, are they going to just pour all these heavy weapons in there and that's going to be the answer? You know, I just don't see how it's going
to
happen.
Even so, right? To what end? To what end? And especially now that there are military operations in Asia now between Japan and South Korea, and the United States is participating in that. Like, I know that weapons are bottomless in America, kind of like Red Robin French fries. But, you know, there does seem to... the one thing I miss the most of my life.
Yes.
But this, I mean, you can't mass produce those to the same scale as Red Robin French fries.
No, that's right. You can't. Well, yeah. So let us know.
I think Natalie hit it though. Like when she said like, to what end, I think that's the point, is they don't want an end.
Right.
The hope is from the weapons manufacturers that there actually is no end.
Yes.
Because then we have to create another war, and right now we don't have to do that because there's already one going.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's my take.
No, it's a never-ending story. I mean, that's the thing. It's and what do we get at the end of the never-ending story? The nothing, right? It's the total destruction of a country, and
you know, or a culture. Yes. I mean, I was really fixated on Russell Brand's video about the school shooting this week, and he says, I feel like this is indicative of a decline of a culture in general, right? We are also disconnected to ourselves, disconnected to source, disconnected to nature, just in general. There are so many reasons you can attribute to this type of thing happening in a culture, and it's unproductive to worry about guns and weaponry and all of that kind of thing. But this culture that's been desperately fought for is a culture that is owned due to violence and weaponry, mm-hmm. right? Pretty much all land nowadays was conquered, you know, every country sort of set its boundaries with violence. Mm-hmm. And it does feel like we're at an inflection point right now where governments are desperately clinging to this violently and bloodily, if that's a word.
It would, you talk about content analysis sometime. It would be interesting because of the prevalence of like social media and the amplification of social media.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worse now than it's ever been? Or is it just normal and it's just amplified? Because, you know, I saw a chart yesterday that showed in 2020, like the amount of murders in 2020, of course, pandemic related. You know, you lock a lot of people down, you take away their jobs, you close their businesses, you take away their livelihood, shit's going to happen.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened. So what happened? Like, why 2020 was there this huge spike in violence? Think about it, right? Is it just amplified now, or was this always how it is? We just hear more of it now because of social media.
I don't know.
I'm not asking you to answer that like you have the answer in front of you. I mean,
I'm thinking about how much I want to share about my own internal thought process, especially in a week when, you know, children have been harmed because of a cultural acceptance of a social contract, which is we elect people who will not change our policy on guns and allow an entire population of people to feel disenfranchised. And we know that's a dangerous combination. And we're feeding them stimulants and like all of these things like feed into the idea.
Poverty.
Right.
That drugs,
that,
opioids.
That makes America an extremely dangerous place, and all the more dangerous because, well, for a lot of reasons. But, you know, we live abroad and we are Americans. And as soon as we open our mouth, people are like, oh, Americans, right? And they immediately come to me. I'm struck at how often this happens to me is people say, I love America. I love American music. I love American movies. You know, I lived in Boston for a while. It's like they immediately try to prove to me their love of American culture. And I'm like, America's so brilliant because all the things that are wrong, right? All the things that make children unsafe are masked by like this beauty of Hollywood where people think everyone there has like beautiful water from a pitcher and, you know, and it's like the idea of exporting your culture, but also exporting violence around the world that I have been stuck with this week. And I don't know what to do with those thoughts, but they're just sort of circling around me when people are saying, oh, you're American. I love American. Let me prove to you that I am American too, or that I have. And I'm like, you know, I left there on purpose, right?
Right. There's a reason we're not there.
And so, this idea that my tax dollars, I work really hard. We live abroad, but we're Americans. We still have to pay just as much as everybody else into the American tax system. And it goes towards harming people. But, you know, there's this sort of love of all things American. I don't know. I'm stuck on this and I can't reconcile it. And I know that, you know, you'll get people who feel very threatened by me saying this will be like, well, then get the heck out. I did, you know, right. So that's always, fine. I still have to pay my taxes.
That comment, by the way, is at the same level of ignorance as, oh, then you must be a Putin sympathizer because you don't want war. Because right. You don't want people to die. So you must be a, you know, put in whatever sympathizer you happen to be. Oh, then you must be Putin's, you know.
Right. And so people sort of feel like, you know, they need to oversimplify, like, it's the greatest country in the world. How dare you say that, right? That's fine that you say that. But again, what I think I was trying to say last night is you have to think of what your social contract is with the government. And if you're fine with it, then stick with it, right? And the rest of us that aren't, you just have to make different choices. And then you really ruminate, like, I feel all the time that I am plugged into the matrix of the American government and that my like life essence is going into not good things. And I don't like how that feels.
So many people, I saw so many comments in our YouTube chat or commentary today saying because of the story we covered on Brazil and how they stood up against the WHO, and they're saying, we're not going to sign this treaty. And I saw so many comments from people. They're like, that's it. I'm moving to Brazil. Like, for them, it's like their social contract is like they don't want the United States government turning over its sovereignty to the World Health Organization that's going to tell them how to live their life.
Yeah.
Right. And so that's a good turning point for us to talk about Davos now, because this is a group of elites that get together in Davos, Switzerland, and you have the World Economic Forum that's completing its week, where they're eating all sorts of ridiculous food and expensive foods. By the way, did you see this? This is one of the things that they're eating right now. This is the global elites eating a $50 burrito. Take a look at this. This is what $50 will get you.
That doesn't even look like a very good burrito. It looks very dry to me.
It looks like it's been like sitting under a heat lamp. But here's your $50 burrito at Davos. Like, this is what they can spend money on. And I get, and not even like a good serving of guacamole. Like, that's not a health. That's not even a good guacamole, too.
Well, yeah, no, it's not.
My sister-in-law, my brother-in-law make a hell of a better guacamole than that. Like, actual avocado with onions and like that looks like garbage for $50.
Yes, that doesn't look.
But
good.
maybe it's like marbled. Maybe it's like a nice marbled, like, what is it, like Wagyu or something like that in there. You know, it'd have to be.
Right. Yeah. But, you know, one of my closest friends lives in Switzerland, and she says that, you know, I mean, Switzerland has a beautiful growing season, but it's not year-round, so a lot of their more exotic foods are grown in Portugal. For instance, the avocados and the berries. I don't know about those tomatoes, but those are imported, right? A lot of those things can't be grown in the Swiss Alps, in the Swiss mountains. Right. So they are, not only does that not look delicious, but it's got a high carbon footprint on it. So what again, Davos, about those net zero panels?
Right. So let's go through, let's talk about some of the latest stories out of Davos, because again, there's one theme here, apart from this is a CNBC article from Davos, over $50 for a burrito, and the menu items, the shellfish, and they're talking all about sustainability and the fish that they're bringing in for all of these events and all of the different panels and everything and all of the money that's being spent here. Make no mistake about it, like every panel, and I went through so many panels today, just seeing, you know, looking at the titles, but then watching some of the different back and forth, and I got no way I'm watching all of these panels, by the way. You can't. You would pull your hair out to watch them all. But there was a theme that just like ran through this. I think two themes. One, it's all about control. Like, how can we have how can we have more control over you? That's it.
But it's couched in panels like getting young people to, I mean, I can't even say it without laughing. Getting young people to trust us again.
Yeah, that was one of the panels.
Yes, it was.
And that was actually one of the themes too. It's like, how can we restore trust here at Davos? That's one of our big things. They actually 6 weeks ago wanted to make sure that their panels were centered around how can we garner more trust with the world. I got an idea. How about you don't try to control other human beings? That, why don't we start there with your microchips? That was one of the panels. We heard from Pfizer CEO talking about microchips. We heard about from Alibaba CEO talking about tracking, carbon footprint tracking, of course. We heard from Henry Kissinger saying that Ukraine needs to surrender its land so that that Putin can take control of land. On and on and on the panels went. But I thought it was interesting. I kind of went back in history a little bit to look at last year's. And so I wanted to go through and see what changed. And here was an amazing panel that was just last year. And just listen to, this is why I think it's so confounding right now for these guys at Davos, because they will tell you out of one side of their mouth how important Russia is to the world economy, right? And how we should support Russia and have them as part of this conversation. We should be open and honest with each other. So this was last year's panel. And wait till you see who they introduce. Roll it.
Russia is an important global power. And so it's a long-standing tradition of Russia's participation in the World Economic Forum. At this moment in history, where the world has a unique and short window of opportunity to move from an age of confrontation to an age of cooperation, the ability to hear your voice, the voice of the President of the Russian Federation, is essential.
It's essential.
Even, and especially in times characterized by differences, disputes, and protests, constructive and honest dialogue to address our common challenges is better than isolation and polarization.
Oh, okay. So just to be clear, we don't agree with you. We're totally, we're not on the same page at all. We should always be talking, right? This is last year,
yes.
Right? So I'd like to introduce none other than Vladimir Putin from the Russian Federation.
Dear colleagues, dear Klaus, I've visited Davos many times, assisting meetings starting from the 90s. Mr. Schwab just mentioned that we met each other first back in 1992.
Conversations, discussions, right?
Yet many panels this year center around what do we do about the Russian problem?
Right.
How do we remove dependence on Russian oil? How do we, so many panels are specifically about Russia as the enemy.
And this afternoon, in fact, we learned another mention from Davos about oil, specifically oil, saying, and it was George Soros once again speaking today, saying that Russia is full of oil. Like literally their storage tanks are full. So again, just think about this, right? Like the world's like, we're going to sanction the shit out of you. We're going to run you right into the ground. Look at the ruble, okay? look at the world's debt. Look at the United States, $30 trillion in debt, right? Look at Europe right now being squeezed with a lack of oil because they won't have these discussions. And Russia sitting on full storage tanks of oil with all kinds of food and agriculture. And that's why they're able to fund the rebuilding of Mariupol. We showed you all of those long convoys of trucks pouring into the Ukraine, to start to rebuild that city. And I heard from a lot of you, actually, those of you from Chechnya wrote to me and said, boy, I hope they rebuild that whole area like they did in Chechnya. And I heard from Chechens who wrote to me specifically to tell me, why do you think the Chechens support Russia? Because they rebuilt their whole country, or they rebuilt Grozny and other areas and, you know, did a great job. I don't know. I'm not Chechen, so I'll take your word for it on that. But again, they're fully flush in cash, rubles up, oil's up, and they're not invited to the table. And all of these other elites who want to control you are in the position right now. I think they actually control everything. They absolutely control everything. They control the opportunity right now to stop this war and to push Vladimir Zelensky in the right way. And they're not. They're sitting on their hands.
Which is interesting. Yesterday, we had a comment on the video that I did about the Russian economy and the United States shutting down Russia's ability to repay its debts. The Western media will have you think that these Russian debts or Russian investments are not held by anybody. They're junk bonds. Nobody cares. But in fact, in the comments section, international investors had let us know that they don't feel like that at all. It's really only the Western media telling that to other investors, that there are global investors who are interested still in investing in Russia. And I appreciate those comments because I wouldn't see that. I still, you know, from the media that is served to me otherwise. So I appreciate that tip.
Yeah, I heard from someone from an American in Russia who wrote to me, says he lives in Russia and watches us all the time. And he says, you know, things are not as the media portrays it. He and we have other friends who live in St. Petersburg. So they just keep their head down, but they're doing fine. Like they're doing fine. So it's interesting, this Western narrative right now.
Right. I want to be careful. We're not, you know, making it seem like, well, Russia seems fine. That's the best place to be, right? Like sitting on a bunch of oil is still not a renewable fossil fuel. It's still a fossil fuel, right? It's still... like destroying places and then going to rebuild them is not actually what is going to get us to our carbon emissions.
Yeah, like bringing tanks into a country is maybe, you know, like that's not how we would want our kids to solve a conflict.
Right? Yes. So, right. Okay. We're, you know, I just want to couch it as like, that doesn't mean that this is an awesome thing, right? What it means is we may not be getting the full narrative.
Yes.
And there may be, you know, things that we don't get to know that others might think are favorable. But I don't see these like rebuilding projects as like, oh, great. You know, we're going to like rebuild with renewable material. Now everyone lives in huts that's solar paneled. Like, that's not the reality. These things are still, this is the carbon footprint of this conflict. I shudder to think.
Right. It's just amazing to me, though, that you're able to have conversations during times of conflict. And you saw Klaus Schwab there talking about how important it is, even during times of turmoil, to have discussions with people we might not agree with. Right. And so they're able to beam in via a Zoom call, Vladimir Zelensky, to the WEF, which is what they did. But there's no discussion from the Russian Federation in that regard.
There actually is a Russian expert on the panel, and I'd have to look back through it.
A Russian expert or somebody from?
Someone actually from Russia is on at least one panel, because I combed through this the other day with a fine tooth comb. I'd have to look back through because I didn't note it.
But Putin is not.
Not Putin, but I think it is someone like an economic advisor or somebody like that. Do you have the
program up? No, I have other notes on it.
Because I literally, like, I read it all, but I also just did a control F. It was like, who there is from Russia? Do they get any voice? Because they do. It's minor. And, you know, there are also many representatives from China as well.
Just make sure, make sure you, sorry, wrong one. Sorry.
Make sure you brush your teeth.
No, I'm just trying to get on my, it's not used to my, there we go.
Make
just
sure you there. Floss.
Make sure you get your $50 burrito at Davos.
But you know, that's also just kind of the price of things in Switzerland. We were in Switzerland recently and a latte is $6. It's everything there is super expensive. That's just sort of the way of things.
But not $50.
Not $50.
But when you go to Davos, they know they can rack up the price for you.
Sure.
So did we accomplish anything at Davos? I mean, did we accomplish anything at the World Economic Forum? I mean, other than telling, you know, George Soros saying that Russia has full storage and that Europe should hold on. Don't do anything crazy. Just hold. Keep supplying weapons to destroy Vladimir Putin. We're going to control you with trackers and microchips. Like, this is what was talked about. And these are some of the big takeaways and headlines from this event.
Mm.
Did it meet your expectations?
Not at all helpful to me. No, I didn't really learn much, but I wasn't invited either.
Yeah.
Maybe if I had.
Well, I, for one, feel good that billionaires get to walk away with some peace of mind. And that's really what I'm all about. As long as they get to feel good about themselves, I'm okay.
They get to get on their private jets. and fly out of there, right? While they lecture everyone else about carbon footprints.
Yeah. I refer you to the piece we did on Monday about stakeholder capitalism and how they're just so happy to speak for everybody and how that is an impossibility.
Yeah. It's all about stakeholders was the theme.
Okay. Let's talk about Afghanistan because this is a serious story. Children are starving in Afghanistan, and the United Nations says that more than 1.1 million children under the age of five will face the most severe form of malnutrition this year. Now, Western forces left Afghanistan last year, and the government immediately fell into the hands of the Taliban. Aid programs have been able to keep people alive up until now, but barely. Last year, when the Taliban took over the government of Afghanistan, the Biden administration froze $7 billion in assets that were in the hands of U.S. banks. This money belonged to the Afghan government, but the U.S. government didn't want the new Taliban government to have it. And they can do that because the U.S. dollar is the world's global currency. For now, not for long, if China has its way. So the U.S. government held that money while the Afghan government imploded. In February, the Biden administration said it would take that $7 billion and split it. It says, we will give this back to the Afghani people, but only 3.5. It now seeks to give them back $3.5 billion of their own money and keep the other half to give to victims of 9/11 so that the U.S. Victims of 9/11, which, of course, you remember, the U.S. invaded Afghanistan as retaliation for September 11th. Now, here's where it gets tricky, right? Victims of September 11th had sued and won judgments against the Taliban, and they went to court and asked a judge to give them a writ of execution to access the money that the United States is holding on behalf of the Taliban. The Biden administration said that they would let them have it, but first the government will put it in a trust. Now, okay, obviously, if these families have the right to sue the Taliban and, you know, they are owed the judgment, in my opinion, that they won. But the money that we're talking about that they're going to be accessing did not initially belong to the Taliban. It belonged to the Afghan government, and it includes gold and bonds and other funds that the government of Afghanistan had saved up from humanitarian aid since the U.S. invaded over 20 years ago. This money is what experts call Afghanistan's rainy day fund, which is ironic because they are in a serious drought, which makes them need that money for food, right? The U.S. is holding on to it, and it will allow plaintiffs to be paid out for it. So the Taliban absolutely should pay its judgments, but from this money, which was meant for their starving government, it's supposed to be for aid for Afghani people. This is why I say this is tricky, right? Of course, we don't know that the Taliban would use it for aid, even if they did have possession for it. Of course, we don't know that. But if the U.S. can easily give Ukraine $40 billion, can it also do something about these starving Afghani babies for which it shares culpability? So why are they starving? Well, drought has plagued Afghanistan, so food imports are crucial. There's also a lack of access to clean water and medical care. And these awful pictures of mommies who can't breastfeed their babies because they are malnourished, baby formula, I mean, forget it, right? So you know the story there. These children are being diagnosed with what is called severe wasting. According to UNICEF, this is the most lethal type of malnutrition in which food is so lacking that a child's immune system is compromised. Yet, according to the United Nations, industrialized nations waste 670 million tons of food per year. So this is not a supply problem. This is a distribution problem, right? So while the Western world is doling out cash for weapons galore, Afghanistan children are literally wasting. This is a word that just not should not be applied to humans. We can talk about food wasting, but not person wasting. Awful.
And I watched a PBS NewsHour did a really interesting over the past couple of weeks about the starving children there and just interviewing the moms like living on the street, wailing in desperation. I mean, imagine sleeping on the street with your children and in cold temperatures, by the way, trying to get any kind of money you can, just trying to beg for money. And the kids are trying to go out there and raise money by shining shoes. They can get a few pennies just for doing that. Watch.
And their mother is desperate. We first found her at the local market, her children laid out like goods for sale, begging strangers for help. But help, there is none. So for a few pennies, they polish shoes. It does not earn them any kind of living, not even enough to buy bread.
And then they fight over like scraps of bread. And this is, you know, I just get chills like thinking about this, right? You think about what's going on in the United States right now. We have babies that are hungry right now because of no baby formula in the United States.
And I just want to say, I do see this conversation happening in our chat about why don't moms just nurse, right? And I agree, nursing is one of the most beautiful things as a woman that we are given. I nursed three babies all past a year, but it's just not that easy for everyone. Recall that we are living in a time with high rates of infertility. Not everyone's body can do this. Actually, that has always been the way for women, which is why we had communities which could nurse each other's babies. But we don't live in communities like that anymore. I would happily nurse other people's babies if I thought that I can't anymore, but that's just not the way we live anymore. And so the way we live is we literally have cut ourselves off from the ability to support ourselves with our own bodies and with nature. And so for women who still can nurse, I'm sure that's very comforting. If my babies were still nursing, I would feel very comforted that we didn't have to depend on the food supply. But a lot of people still do. What's the quote you said, Philip, is that humans like pull food out of the earth and take it away from ourselves or something like that?
Yeah. That was from Daniel Quinn, where he's saying like it's an interesting thing that humans, we take food, which the earth gives freely, then we lock it up and then we have to work to get some of it back. But I'd also like to point out like what you're saying with formula. So one of the things, especially like in sub-Saharan Africa, Nestle actually had a campaign. They had launched a campaign, conscripted doctors to convince women that breast milk was unsafe for their babies, so that they would become addicted, basically have no choice but to use formula.
Yes.
So it's not always just like a oh, this is what we have access to. In many places, this was the script. This was actually orchestrated.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just think about like Kellogg's. The whole reason we don't eat like a healthy breakfast anymore in the United States, and we're one of the fattest countries in the world, is because they told us that we needed to eat their sugary cereals. Like that's the part of a like that.
Right.
And the same thing with diapers. Right. The reason that the United States has kids wearing diapers up until they're like 10 years old.
Absolutely. Yes. Right? So the United States is the country that potty trains the latest than any other country in the world. Most countries simply can't afford to buy diapers past 1 year. So their kids kind of figure it out because it's gross to pee themselves and they feel it, right? And so the diaper companies sponsored doctors to tell us that we should wait till the baby lets us know that they're ready. And now the diaper companies make all the way up to a size 7 diaper. That doesn't mean you're 7 years old, but like, size 7 is a really big diaper.
And I remember all
that
the ads.
In every other country in the world, those babies are trained, but not in the United States.
I remember those ads. They're like, hey, they were called like trainers or something, like diaper. They're like, now you can run in them. Like, and it was like kids that like literally could be like playing football, like in Pee Wee like league. They're like, now you can wear these at 10 years old. And it was like, you can even move around in them. Like they slide up and you can run and take off.
And it's funny to have these conversations with people in daycare or, you know, play places, and these moms are like, we're just gonna wait until they're ready. I'm like, that's interesting. It's a good thing you don't live in the Philippines,
right?
Because that baby would not be putting that baby on a changing table at 3
or in Afghanistan.
My mom forced me to be potty trained when I could express a preference in brand of diaper. When I was like, I actually kind of preferred these ones over those ones. And then she's like, no, you're done.
Wow. I like the blue ones with the soft lining on the sides, Dad. Can you put those on me?
I'm just going to take this opportunity, though, to say that we cloth diapered our babies. And one, they don't go in the landfill. And two, cloth diaper babies feel it. So they understand what happens when they have wet themselves and they train earlier. Sorry, I had to.
Okay, but let's go back to the main story here, which is that 1 million children in Afghanistan could face severe malnutrition. And so beyond just the who can breastfeed, who can't, this was an absolutely destroyed country by the United States, right? This was the United States of America destroyed this country, okay, for 20 years. And we took their money. We robbed their land. We destroyed everything about this country, right? And now we leave in a total disaster, a total disastrous exit after 20 years of just running roughshod over that country. I mean, trillions of dollars wasted. For what? For nothing. And now you have all of these children starving. And not even just the children, 23 million people in Afghanistan facing severe food shortages and malnutrition. So the children on top of the rest of the population that's absolutely being crushed.
Yes, it's awful. This is an awful story. We absolutely should demand more from our government for taking responsibility. And I did also see in the chat that some of you think this is not tricky. That money should not go to September 11th victims. You know, our government has not really shown itself willing to help September 11th victims, as it, in my opinion, it should have. So should it take this money, which was a savings account from the Afghani government, which was not the Taliban, and let it fall into the hands of the Taliban? This is an awful story. There's no simple answer.
Yeah.
All right. Shall we talk about Jim Psaki? You want to have a little fun with this as our palate cleanser?
Yes.
A palate cleanser story of the night, you guys. Okay.
All right. Jen Psaki. I don't know how we missed this one. So Jen Psaki, of course, White House press secretary, long time. She was with CNN first. I think she was with CNN first before she went to the Biden administration. And then she just finished up her term as White House press secretary in dramatic fashion, by the way. You remember the an African reporter in the back was like, can we talk about Africa? And basically her last day, she like yelled down this reporter. So that was a good way to end that. Good way to end it.
All right.
All right. But yeah, she's got a new job.
So now she's decided that she is going to join MSNBC. This was sort of whispered about, though, long before when she first announced that she was retiring from the White House. This was the speculation. So this is not necessarily novel, right? But it is kind of telling because, okay, MSNBC already has former White House communications director Nicole Wallace, right?
Right. Full of lies, Nicole Wallace. Okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
She worked under George W. Bush.
Right.
Although she'd never conducted press briefings at the podium. Fox News has Dana Perino. She was the White House press secretary under George W. Bush. So These hires, they're fair game, right?
Fair game for what?
Well, that's the question.
Fair game for this. Like if you take my laptop here, and I'm still learning this whole new system here. So my laptop screen. Yeah, here we go. So this is Glenn Greenwald's new documentary out on Nicole Wallace. Calls the Typhoid Mary of disinformation. So you can watch that now on Rumble. The hardest part of producing this was deciding which of her countless lies to omit due to time constraints. So this is the problem with press secretaries, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they literally are mouthpieces of disinformation. Like that's what they're sent up there to be mouthpiece, to literally disseminate falsehoods. And so it's hilarious to think that a government then is going to lecture us about what is quality information and then what is disinformation.
Right.
When literally every day you're up there and can't answer simple questions about who we bombed, where we're funneling money to. You called Hunter Biden's laptop fake news, Russian information. Are you going to apologize about that from the podium, from the taxpayer podium where you're supposed to be telling the truth?
Yeah.
And you're full of shit.
But also, she's not a reporter, right?
Right.
MSNBC thinks that they scored a big brand by scoring her, right?
It's perfect for
them. But she has no on-camera experience, and she absolutely is not a reporter. So it is, if there ever was like a thin veil of neutrality, it's not there with a move like this, right? And not that there would be anyway, but you think of what could they do with a salary like that? Because surely she's getting paid handsomely and much more than she was at the White House, because those government jobs are fancy, but they don't come with the same kind of baseball money that a network news anchor would, right? And so they're deciding to hire this big brand rather than actual investigative journalists.
Right.
Because they think, you know, and then of course her people are going to make her a brand too, which is fine, right? This is just kind of, it's almost like it's what everything that's wrong, you know, these days is we want these like brand mouthpieces.
It just speaks to these like Washington media elites who watch MSNBC. Like who watches MSNBC? It's people that live in Washington who want to see their viewpoint on television. So they want to see their own conviction bias on television. So it's the same people that thought that she was a great press secretary, you know, wanted to see her spar a little bit with some of those reporters who would push back at her. There was plenty of clips of her going up against Peter Ducey.
Yeah, yeah. You know? They loved that.
Yeah.
Sure. But, you know, when CBS earlier this year hired Mick Mulvaney from the Trump administration, they were kind of candid about it. And they're like, we need a Republican because Republicans are going to sweep in the midterms, which the writing on the wall seems to be the case, right? And we don't really have anyone from this side to explain it to.
So you get Mick Mulvaney.
So, yeah, I mean, I was like, Fox News doesn't have a problem hiring, but okay, that's the guy you want. Fine. But MSNBC doesn't need this from Jen Psaki. They don't need Democratic strategy. They've got plenty.
No, the whole station is Democratic moderate beltway strategy. It's, you know, it's how do we keep Bernie Sanders off of our television sets internally? Remember, we had the MSNBC whistleblower, who the producer, who said, we were told as a producer at MSNBC, we are not allowed to have Bernie Sanders, Andrew Yang on the air.
Yeah.
They lied about the graphics they would put up for who was running for president, who was the Democratic candidate. They had Joe Biden there. They had Kamala Harris. No Andrew Yang missing, even though he was polling higher than Kamala Harris. We're not allowed, we were told, as producers at MSNBC. Not me. I'm just speaking from the producer that went, who was the whistleblower. We covered this about 2 years ago here on the show. And she said, yeah, we were told, like, no booking Andrew Yang and Bernie Sanders. Like, because they know they would help them.
Yeah.
And you can't hurt the establishment. These establishment Democrats, these, you know, these corporatists who run the show. I mean, that's it. They're just part of this. They're part of this disinformation. So I think this Glenn Greenwald, I can't wait to watch it, by the way, this Glenn Greenwald documentary on Nicole Wallace as the Typhoid Mary of disinformation. But can we say about Jen Psaki, though, for a second? She's going to get a streaming show on MSNBC. Like, they're starting this like streaming service.
Yes,
as part of,
but she probably also will,
she'll pop in as a contributor,
be in the other seats as well.
But didn't we learn our lesson from CNN about starting a streaming service?
And MSNBC already had a streaming service. I was one of their anchors.
Yeah.
Didn't you watch my show? You do remember.
That's how well it went.
That's rude. I will say that I also was an MSNBC contributor. And I can't wait to see what the hair and makeup people at the network, because MSNBC has the best hair and makeup people. So I already noticed that they, because if you look, Jen Psaki was on Jimmy Fallon last night. Go ahead and play this little clip. And you notice they like, I was going to say, oh, her hair is going to get bouncier and her lipstick is going to get a lot glossier. And that's exactly what they did.
Being at the podium, explaining difficult things to the public, that was fun to me.
Yeah.
It was great. I learned something new every day. I got to call people up who were the experts on things. Jake Sullivan and Brian Deese and all these people who knew so much. And I learned something new every day. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
So Jake Sullivan, by the way. So that's the new Jen Psaki. That's how we will see her now.
I love that she cites Jake Sullivan.
As someone who taught her something every day.
That she learned something from. As we pointed out here just a few days ago, he was instrumental, of course, in the Russiagate hoax and actually disseminating fake propaganda about Trump and a server between the Alpha Bank. So Jake Sullivan, that's who she's learning from. But again, a streaming service, I don't know. I just want to kind of go back to that, like this MSNBC streaming service. Like, how are they going to, like, they have it now, or is it going to be rolled out kind of like CNN Plus, and then is it going to be part of like Peacock, and we won't really even know?
Maybe they had it all along and they just I don't know, because remember I had a show on MSNBC streaming service called Code Forward. And then they said, well, we're not going to really do the streaming service much anymore. So that's why my show was shut down. But maybe they just want to get rid of me. And it's been there all along.
It's possible. It's like this dormant streaming service that we don't even know about.
They're like, don't tell her. Just tell her the network's dead.
They were just holding on until a huge star like Jen Psaki came along. And they're like, now we're going to dust off this beast, this dinosaur.
What were you going to say, Philip?
Oh, I was just giving you a hard time. I was just going to say, you know, like, we've all known that it's been there. They just, everybody told us not to tell you.
Okay. Right. Darn.
Yeah. It's still there.
It's a global conspiracy.
Yeah.
It's like, what's his name in The Office, where he's like still going to work, even though. Like,
oh, Milton. And he's in the basement.
Like, he's in the basement. He's like, yeah, he's not even getting paid anymore. Like, oh, Milton.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, they keep moving you down to some other dusty room or something. But
well, I thought I parted ways nicely with MSNBC. And also, I was pregnant with my third at the time, and I started to get sick in the makeup chair. And I was like, okay, I'm good. Not doing this job anymore.
Yeah. So Jen Psaki, we'll be keeping our eyes on you, Jen Psaki.
Jen Psaki, the brand.
The brand.
Yeah, we wish her luck.
All right. I don't wish anybody ill will. So, I mean, good for her, you know, like, but we know exactly what we're going to get here. I mean, you spent 2 years like spewing lies from the podium. Are you going to continue that now?
Yes. You know, I mean,
with a streaming service. Do we expect something different? I mean, you're just going to get more of the same.
Yes. More of the same. That's
it would
what
be
they,
really interesting.
I would like
though,
to see
her,
it. I would.
Yeah. What if her first show is like, we're uncovering the Hillary Clinton Russiagate hoax. And she like dives deep into like getting the actual story about Hillary Clinton. Wouldn't that be amazing?
Or she opens up some kind of like inside the pandemic, why we made all these decisions to basically screw with you. We'd all be like, wow, why didn't you tell us that? You told us all to stay home and, you know.
Yeah.
So.
All right.
Okay, that's our show for the night, you guys.
Well, we have super chats and stuff, and I want to mention I should do this before we do super chats. We have a website, and I want you all to go to, please sign up. It's totally free. Go to redacted.inc. We have a lot of new viewers here tonight. I see Orange Blossom 2112 is here and new. Welcome. So go sign up. We have our own community where we won't be censored. It's over at redacted.inc. See down there in little print down there in the lower right-hand corner, redacted.inc down there in the lower right-hand corner.
It's like, no, it's on your side.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, no, yeah, it's under me.
Yeah, you can point to it. Redacted.inc, Redacted Inc. Go there, sign up. It's free. And then you can also become a channel supporter if you'd like as well. We have a special interview we're going to release tomorrow, I believe, tomorrow, with Dr. Peter McCullough. You don't want to miss that. Of course, he has a new book out about COVID-19 and really a fascinating, fascinating interview that we did. And he, of course, was on the forefront of leading alternative therapies that were getting shut down and blacklisted and censored left and right, even though the results were amazing. He was told he couldn't do that because he was up against the biopharmaceutical complex. So we have a deep discussion about that, and that will be released to members only tomorrow. So please come over and subscribe. Okay, now we can do super chats. Sorry.
All right. Let's do some super chats. Oh, we just had. I like it whenever we say, okay, we're going to get to super chats, then people start sending more super chats. So,
yeah, any
like
questions you have for super chats, fire them away. We'll try to answer some of your questions here.
All right, from the top of the show, we have Mark Hill with a $2 super chat. I never backed Russia in anything until this. That was in reference to the wheat.
Interesting.
Let's see. Sheila Barrow. $5 super chat. Have you read about the leaked China military secret recordings?
No.
I don't know what that's about.
No, I don't know the leaked China secret military recordings.
Was it from China or about from the U.S. about China? I mean, I'm not very confident what I'll get in Google from it, but.
Yeah. We had James Saad.
Oh, if you mean the plan to invade Taiwan, is that what you're referring to? I did hear about that. And if that was I don't know if you were talking about the U.S. response to it. So it was, yeah, it was Xi Jinping's plan for an invasion of Taiwan. But of course, you know, where does this information come from? How is it leaked? All of that needs questioning, of course, but yes.
Go ahead. All right. Sorry. So James Saad, 1999. That's fine. Super chat. Just FYI, ships have had electronic tags that disarm their own mines when they pass over them. Tech has been around since the 70s. So Russia could, in fact, lay mines in a port they intended to move into, but who knows?
Oh.
I've never heard of that tech before. So that's interesting.
Huh.
Yeah. Interesting.
Thank you for that.
And we've got, thank God there's truth tellers left in the American media somewhere. That was from S. Henderson.
Oh, thank you.
I just naturally assumed they were talking about me, but maybe you guys.
Could be.
You know, maybe you guys. All right, here we go. Shannon with a $4.99 super chat. How do we end collusion and invoke transparency between corporations, government, and media?
Well, I think if we knew that. You know, I think the big tech companies that run the show, I mean, I don't think that's going to happen unless we there was an interesting breakdown of this actually in a new book that's out where he discusses we can't, you know, trying to break these larger big tech companies into like smaller little pieces won't work. We have to have like laws on the books about full transparency with where the money flows, how it's being supplied. And actually, I think in many ways, some of these big tech companies, they're utility companies. Let's be honest, right? Twitter, in many ways, is a utility company.
Yeah.
Like an electric company, right? YouTube is in many ways a utility company at this point. It's a television, right? So maybe there should be regulation in place where there can't be censorship. There can't be, you know, like YouTube came out yesterday at Davos and said, one of their executives, like, we don't censor. And they also said we're not gatekeepers.
Okay, let's move on from that. That's a really good question, though. I think even just understanding these hegemonic tools that are being used against us is a big step forward, because a lot of times we just don't see it. Mm-hmm. You know, we can sort of reject. There was a panel at Davos about ESGs, these like, you know, woke stock funds, and if we know better, right, then we at least we don't. Put our money in there. We don't support it. That's step one.
Anthony Goodley in our chat says, anyone heard about the comet that broke up that's coming close around May 30th? No, but we just need it to hit us by now. Just, you know, I mean, I'm just like, put me out of my misery.
Yeah.
Can you just do a dinosaur on me for now? I mean, my God.
See, I'm rubbing off on you. Cause that's my take on the universe. Is like, what's going to kill me this year? I don't know. Right. All right. So the Iranian Putin just had 420 with a couple of flames after it. I have no idea what that's in reference to.
Yeah. Sometimes they do that. Like if it's 420 in your time zone, but it wasn't at 420. So I saw that and I was like, oh, is he?
No, it was like 402.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Right, but
beer,
thank you.
Beer and flies with the, again, with the $50 super chat. Was a sticker with the hippo character sitting into an office chair when they both transform into a mecha chair hippo hero. So, yeah.
Thank you.
That's like a daily occurrence from Beer and Flies.
I love it.
I love it.
And there was one more. Mark Leonesio sent $5 for an order of steak fries at Red Robin. I'm looking for it.
Thank you so
Bottomless
much.
Bottomless fries and weapons.
Let me see. I need to figure out how to do my screens faster here. So, yeah. And then this happened just a short time before our show. Ray Liotta, and I saw someone said like it was B movie star Ray Liotta, like from the B movie. You know, like the Jerry Seinfeld B movie. Like that's how they labeled him. Like to do it as like of a joke. You know. Not like Goodfellas actor, which he's most famous for. It's just the B movie with Jerry Seinfeld animated B movie. Star Ray Liotta is dead.
He apparently was filming something.
Yeah,
still.
He was in the Dominican Republic filming something when he passed. A movie called Dangerous Waters. He died in his sleep. Nothing suspicious. And he's half Italian and he's from Newark, Newark, New Jersey. So,
I mean, die in your sleep. That's the way to go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
anyway, thank you guys for smashing that like button and subscribing to the channel. How many of the thousands of you that are watching right now on Rumble or other places here on YouTube are subscribers? If you aren't, please. And what happens is YouTube actually unsubscribes people. I don't know why they do this, but they, like, if you look at your subscribe button for the show and it's not red, then that means you're not subscribed. So just hit the subscribe button and turn on the little bell notification. And as David likes to remind us, the little bell, you have to hover over it and you have to click on all, I think. When you click on all, that allows you to get the alerts for our live show. So.
All right. We have one more super chat from Orange Blossom 2112. Is the UFO UAP House Intelligence Panel featuring Adam Schiff the next hoax?
Oh, I have a lot to say about the UFO panel. You know, hey, look, we got a lot of good information from that House panel. Some of it was not as good as I wanted it to be. But at the end of the day, there was some pretty big revelations there, which was good. We actually got the Wilson memo, which came up, which I thought was surprised by. So there was some good stuff that came out of this. Remember, this is just the first in many hearings. So we're going to have a Senate hearing as well, which I'm hoping we'll get some much deeper information on. From now, we know, like, kind of how to do it better. Senator Marco Rubio. So I think we're going to hear some more stuff. But yeah, Adam Schiff. Yeah. Yeah. Don't get me started on him, that jackass. But yes. So thank you for that, Orange Blossom, and welcome. I think Orange Blossom is a new subscriber here. So welcome, welcome, welcome.
Yeah.
Thank you, everyone. We are going to, it's late over here in Europe right now. So we are going to get in bed and,
to sleep. Mm-hmm. We're going to sleep.
We're going to get in bed and, we're going to watch some Top Chef, I think.
Yes. And don't give it away.
I'm going to show you how to cook.
We're behind on this most recent season. Stop it.
I just like to make you uncomfortable.
And people see what a creepy flirter you are.
Creepy flirter.
Hey, okay, good night.
Got you to marry me. Worked. Bye, everyone.